How's it going and welcome back to On The Wire, a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings. Kevin, we're a month into the season. We're in May, finally, and things are moving. Things are starting to notice that a lot of the bidding has started to like plateau a little bit. Do you feel like there's any kind of a rhythm going on in your leagues as far as the bidding goes?
Yeah, I think it had to plateau a little bit. It was crazy there the first few weeks, especially with the closer situations around the league and some other things going on. But I think it's going to slow down for a few weeks, maybe. Other than, as we're going to see later tonight, some of the hot new things are coming and people always get excited about those. So it's crazy. Some of my leagues, 15-team leagues, 8 or 9 teams are below $600 out of 1,000. So we have well over 3/4 of a season left. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So in TGFBI, there's a ton of teams that have gone through more than 50% of their FAB already. So it's really that's a good point to make, just to keep an eye on. It's good advice, really, just to keep an eye on your league mates and what they're spending and how much they're spending, because that's really going to dictate, you know, how much you're going to have to spend moving forward throughout the course of the season, and not just in September when you're the only one with money left and you can just get a bunch of guys for $1 or $2. I know last year I was pretty conservative and I had a ton of money left over at the end of the season. And I was just like, I have to spend it, but like I'm getting guys for $20-$25 with no backup bids, like no competing bids. I'm like, if I just realized I could get these guys for $1, $2, because either one, people are dropping off, obviously, as they tend to do, and there's no money out there to be spent to actually compete with my bids. You can, if you're paying attention to what your league mates have to offer, you can get some pretty good deals later on in the season.
100%.
All right. Speaking of the hot new thing, Scott Chu is here with us to break it down, get his recommendations. Of course, Scott, proud member of the podcast, Pitcherless Podcast Network as well, with his Hacks and Jacks coming out on Mondays, and of course the PL Shorts coming out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, part of my daily routine personally, or at least on those days. And of course he can be found over at the Friends and Fantasy Benefits on Fridays, podcasting over there as well. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. Like, you, even just already thinking about the way that people bid on FAB, and it's been a crazy month. It's like some people forgot that it's not a 60-game season anymore, right? You don't need to spend $300 on a bid in April, right? There may be reasons to do that, but there's not a ton, right? There's not very many scenarios you need to do that. Like, I keep thinking back to, I did not win the 2020 TGFBI. In fact, I like did the opposite, but I did do fairly well in 2019. And the big ads that I made, like one of them was like a rookie, right? Zach Allen, I was able to win him in a bid, and that was pretty exciting. The other big one was like Yuli Gurriel, right? Like, and it was a very conservative. I think I bid $3 because my first baseman got hurt. Like, those are the things that kind of win you leagues. It's not the people that threw all their money at Austin Riley, had a really nice 3-4 weeks, and then had to find out how they were going to make up that spot without money, right? It's really interesting to see how people take that 2020 experience and are turning that into their 2021 experience. And I'm interested to see how it goes. And I hope it goes the way I think it will in the leagues that I'm in, because I'm not spending like crazy yet.
Yeah. Scott, it looks like you've only spent about $83 in TGFBI this year. You only made 4 moves all season from my records say. And so that's actually, personally, from my point of view, that's impressive to go through the whole month of the season and only make 4 moves. Like, you're the one team that is feeling really comfortable about your team and not having to make those kind of moves.
Yeah, I'm really comfortable in about 10th right now. Yeah. Just really settled in there. I've tried to make more moves than that. Some people have been more aggressive than I have. Oh, sure. And really, on that particular team, the biggest thing I need is just players to do better. like that team's not going to get better from ads I make, right? It's going to be from like Kenta Maeda pitching better. It's going to be those kinds of things. There's a lot of people out there who have Marcell Ozuna, who have some of these slow starters, and like the wire isn't going to be what brings you back into your leagues. It's going to be your team performing the way that you think that it should have, or that you thought that it should have when you drafted it, right? Like sometimes the biggest ad is the one where a player on your team just starts hitting or pitching like you think they should, as opposed to, oh, you had to go get something off the wire.
Yeah, especially at this time of year, you're not going out and giving up on the guy you drafted in the 10th round, even unless he's out for the year with an injury. You got to trust that all the work you did throughout the entire offseason to evaluate these guys and the process you put forward to draft these guys that high they're gonna make their way into your lineup sooner or later.
That's a good point. Absolutely. That's just how it works, right? There's guys that you can cut for sure. There's L's you can take already, right? Some things just aren't working out. I snuck Victor Reyes onto a lot of teams. We'll talk about him in a little bit later. I've given up that ghost, right? Like I'm over it. I get it. I was wrong. And I've been able to move on, but like, I'm not moving on from Kyle Tucker. That's for darn sure. Right. I know those are extreme examples, but
I see a lot of Michael Conforto questions out there too. That's
yeah. Should I cut him? I don't know. Is there a 30 home run, like 350 OBP guy on the wire? Like, if so, yeah, sure.
Yeah. If these guys were doing through the same slump that they're seeing in April, in July, would you cut them? Like just because it's the only stat you can see. Like you only see April stats. That's a season long stats. But if those stats were just moved into another month in the middle of the season and you can mash them in with a good other 2 or 3 months, you're not blinking an eye most of the time, especially if there's guys that you trust in general.
Absolutely. Before, I know we've already taken a long time before we get to the stuff we had on the schedule. I do want to say, if you're unsure if a player has slumped like this before, go to StatCast, go to Fangraphs, look at those rolling charts. They'll tell you if a player has done this before or if they're at a new low or a new high. I hear so often that he's hitting better than ever. That's not true, right? This guy had a 50 or 100 plate appearance sample that was way better than this a year ago, 2 years ago, right? Like it looks like that because you're comparing a 50 game sample or a 50 plate appearance sample to a 50 game sample or a 100 plate appearance sample to a 100 game sample. Like those are so different. Rolling charts help you compare apples to apples. And it's something I think you should really be doing early in a season when it's hard to understand context for some of these players.
A lot of good talk about rolling charts, especially over at PitchCon. You can find some great information there as well. If you look at the pitcher list YouTube channel, you can find PitchCon presentations.
Mine.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to get into some news and notes here throughout the course of the week. Of course, we try to touch on things that are going that may affect your FAB considerations for this coming weekend. So the fact that the Blue Jays are going to play their games up in Buffalo in June may not really affect what we're going to talk about. So we're going to skip over that, except for the fact I just said it. All right. So Scott, we'll start with you. Dustin May is heading under the knife for Tommy John surgery scheduled for this coming Tuesday, ultimately paving the way for Tony Gonsolin to be stretched out and take the fifth spot in the Dodgers rotation. Gonsolin is available in about a third of TGFBI leagues and probably in your 15-team league as well, and available in about two-thirds of Yahoo leagues, which kind of represents 12-team leagues. Are you scooping him up and stashing him where he's available? And is there anyone else in the Dodgers organization that you'd be looking out for rather than Gonsolin?
So, I mean, first things first, in a league like TGFBI, NFBC with no IL, it's really hard to hold a guy for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, right? And then not knowing exactly what he's going to do when he comes back. Is he going to be pitching 6 innings when he comes back? That's not really the Dodgers' MO, right? That's a hard thing to really wrap your head around. In a 12-teamer, 15-teamer, where I've got a bunch of IL spots, I know a lot of leagues have increased the number of IL spots they have. If I've got 3 or 4 total IL spots and they're not already jammed with players I need, absolutely, right? If I've got a free spot. Unfortunately, that's not very many of my teams right now. So I'd like to, and somebody in your league should, in 12 to 15 team leagues. Somebody probably should. It just might not be you because of the way injuries and luck have broken for you so far. So you just got to be honest with yourself, look at your team, be like, hey, can I take another one? I did draft Chris Sale, or I did draft Noah Syndergaard, so they're already eating up a spot. Had a couple other guys get hurt, they're eating up spots. So maybe it's not me. Just make sure you can make that assessment honestly. If you've had some good injury luck, you've got some guys coming back, like maybe you've got Elias or Hernandez, who should be coming back somewhat soon. Maybe, I don't know, the Marlins haven't really said, but someone that you can either cut or move back into your bench, sure, go ahead. If not, you got to just accept that someone else is going to have that opportunity and not you.
All right, we'll move over to Cincinnati. Joey Votto has fractured his thumb, Kevin, and after being hit earlier in the week, he should be out for at least a month or at least through the month of May, probably into June. And on the first day he was out, which was Friday, it was Mike Moustakas who moved over to first base with Eugenio Suarez moving back over to the hot corner. Do you see this being the norm, or is there a decent chance that you can see a little bit more Tyler Stevenson playing first base? I will say that we had the same lineup or same positions on Saturday's game as well, with Moustakas at first and Suarez at third, Farmer playing shortstop. What's your take on the new infield for Cincinnati?
Yeah, I checked that right away this afternoon as well, and was happy to see they did the same thing they did last night. As a Suarez, yeah, I have Suarez on some rosters, and I really think part of his struggles has been trying to worry about playing shortstop. This could be the best thing that happened to him. I think it's going to be Moose at first base, Suarez at third, and Farmer at shortstop, which really I don't have any interest, so I don't see much change in there.
Yeah, if I could throw in one thing there. When I talked about rolling charts just a second ago. This is a player where there is one thing alarming on those rolling charts, and that's the way the strikeouts have moved the last season and a half or so. So that is something to keep in mind. I have Suarez on some teams too. I like him, but that's the kind of thing you want to be looking at. Maybe getting off shortstop will help a little bit and have it come back down, but I'm going to be watching that strikeout rate for sure.
Yeah, I think it's great for Suarez. Me personally, as somebody who got lucky and bid on Tyler Stevenson last week in my TGFBI league with all the other catcher injuries going on, I was really hoping we'd see a little bit more of him playing first base and just leave the rest of the infield the way it was and just get one of those unicorns where Stevenson can get pretty much every day playing time between first base and backup catcher for the Reds. And that doesn't look like the direction that they're going yet. There's still some time for him to squeeze in a couple extra games here or there, but I agree. I think this was the better move on the part of the Reds to move Moustakas over to first and Suarez a third. All right, Scott, Christian Yelich came back and then went right back on the IL with no timetable to return. Also, Keston Hiura was demoted in Milwaukee. Is there anybody in Milwaukee that you like to get added playing time due to either or both of these moves?
Yeah, and it's Avisail Garcia, who I've been on ever since the offseason. It was amazing last season. He was the center fielder for the Brewers. He weighed 280 pounds, 6'4", 280 pounds. For reference, that is Frank Thomas size. He was Frank Thomas size playing center field. He lost a bunch of weight this last offseason, and it's really helped him move around. He's running a lot better. The real stats are starting to catch up to the expected stats. Like, his expected batting average is over 300. That expected slugging's really high. I know that the day that we're recording this on Saturday, he's hit another home run, three more hits. Coming into this game, he was hitting 500 in the month of May. So that expected stuff is finally matching the actual production. I do think he's going to play more. I wanted to believe a little more in Jackie Bradley Jr., but I think him and Lorenzo Cain are going to be platooning back and forth because they just don't want to expose Bradley to lefties for a good reason. He's just been terrible against them, especially the last few years. So I really like Avi Garcia where he's available.
All right. Somebody else who returned from the IL and has stayed healthy since is Jock Peterson. He came back to the Cubs lineup this week, Kevin, and was promptly given the leadoff spot duties, especially with Ian Happ out as well. He's available in about 20% of TGFBI leagues and 80% of Yahoo leagues. Should he be picked up now that he's healthy, Peterson?
I think if you want to pick him up, you have to do it now, but it depends on how the Cubs are going to use him. They came into this season saying he was going to play every day. If he's going to play every day, he's going to hit 180, 190. And then that kills you. For three of the four seasons building up through 2019, the last full season we saw, he hit between 246 and 249, right? And had 25, 25, and 36 home runs. Getting his 400 to 450 at-bats, only playing against right-handed pitchers. If the Cubs are going to do that, he gets enough counting stats in those limited numbers of at-bats to be valuable. But if they roll him out there every day, the batting average just drops way too low for me to be comfortable. So if you want to give him a shot, you got to pick him up now because he won't be available much longer. However, I'm going to try not to use him until I see how the Cubs are using him. If they're going to roll him out there every day, I'm dropping him.
Kevin just nailed it, right? And if you're in a daily league, just because the Cubs are using him every day doesn't mean you should, right? Like, he is best used as a platoon. Kevin is absolutely right here.
Yeah, I've had Jock Peterson on my 12-teamer in Yahoo on and off for the last like 2 or 3 years. And I had him on my IL while he was on the IL just now. Literally 2 days after he came out the IL, I didn't have to make any moves, so I just let him sit there. And then I realized, you know what? No, I'm not making room for you off my IL. You're just the one that has to get dropped so I can make more moves. But yeah, I totally agree. In a daily move, that's really the only option I've ever seen Jock Peterson being beneficial, where you can pick and choose when you get to put them in there. All right, Scott, a couple of hip flexors are keeping a couple of guys out. Luis Robert and Alejandro Kirk should miss extended period of time for their respective teams. Who benefits in each of these situations for the White Sox and for the Blue Jays?
I'll start with the easy one. For the Blue Jays, it doesn't really matter. I'm not really interested in any of the catchers they might bring up. Danny Jansen's there. He's not hitting. His upside is like a second catcher in 15 teamers, right? So I don't really chase any of that stuff. If he gets hot or has some nice matchups, I might stream him in a league where I still need a second catcher, but otherwise I'm not interested. For the White Sox, I think obviously it's Andrew Vaughn, right? Tony La Russa has found ways to not play Vaughn, right? He keeps letting like Zach Collins in. He just does all kinds of just finding ways to not play him. He's not going to have much choice anymore. And I do Vaughn as like a top 20-ish first baseman. I know that some of our colleagues at Pitcher List, like Dave Churman, are higher on Vaughn than I am, just because I don't see – it's really tough to adjust from single A and then alternate site ball to the major leagues. It's really difficult, especially the breaking stuff that you got to start seeing on an everyday basis and the way pitchers attack you in different ways every single day. So I do think there's a top 20-ish first baseman, a nice corner infield. And then, of course, if you're in like an AL-only league or something, Lurie Garcia is going to play. That's a Tony La Russa player if I've ever seen one, right? Just like a scrappy, can play a little infield, little outfield. He's going to play a lot. And in like super deep leagues, he'll have some streaming value because he gets hot. But don't hold him for all season, like for the whole season, for God's sake. Don't do that. You don't need that. But he might have some value in very specific scenarios.
All right, Kevin, in Arizona, Joaquin Soria came off the IL this week. And of course, he was expected by many to get the majority of the save opportunities in Arizona before being sidelined. Now that he's back, should we expect him to be the next high price reliever in this week's fab period where he is available?
I think it depends on what happens these first couple of days. The Arizona situation has been one of the more crazy. We don't know who it is on a daily basis. They switch around. Yeah, we expected it to be Soria. Do we know what's going to be him? They're losing to the Mets right now. It's late in the game. We won't find out tonight what's going on. And that's probably the best case scenario, right? Hopefully he doesn't get a save this weekend or get a save opportunity even. Pick him up inexpensively and then see what happens next week. But if he does get a save, if things change tonight or he gets one tomorrow, then yes, he will be one of those guys we've talked about all season long. We'll put a bid on. Mine won't be high enough. I won't be rostering him on my team because, yeah, I think we talked earlier about the fab bidding plateauing a little bit, but there's so many people that still need closers. When a closer becomes available, we're still looking at triple digits.
There is no closer plateau fab bidding. It only goes up.
Yeah, Soria has pitched twice since coming back from the IL. This past Wednesday, he was used in the seventh inning. And then just on Friday, he actually pitched a clean ninth inning before seeing Crichton came in and allowed the walk-off hit in the 10th inning. So he is being thrown into late inning situations right away. Hasn't quite made it into a save opportunity, though Arizona doesn't really see a whole lot of save opportunities, to be fair. So we'll have to see how that goes. That,
if that one in the save column, yep. It blows everything out of the water, right? So
All right, we'll get away from the bullpens. Scott, Rougned Odor was placed on the IL with a sprained knee, and Luke Voit is looking like he may return to New York, perhaps by the time Odor is eligible to return from his own IL stint, if his rehab games go well. Are you interested in somebody like Mike Ford or anybody else in New York as a stopgap for this coming week while Odor is out and before Voit returns?
No, not really. Right? Mike Ford is going to bat like sixth-ish, and you're going to be like, man, that'd be great. He's batting there. It's like towards the middle of the order. But like Mike Ford ain't that good, right? There's not enough there. There's a little bit of power, but it's just not that exciting. I would have liked this a lot more if I thought the Yankees were going to face this like really soft, like right-handed set of pitchers, right? And they might towards like the weekend, right? So they're going to be in Camden Yards against the Orioles. And there's a couple matchups there, but guess what? That's when Odor might be back. And that's when Voit might be back. So he might not even be playing by that point. Before then, it's going to be the Rays who like don't care about your platoons because they'll just throw in a new pitcher, some other guy that throws 95 from whatever side with some weird breaking ball. So I'm not that interested. The schedule doesn't line up well for it. And he doesn't have the talent to overcome a tough or even like moderate schedule.
All right, a couple other guys going on the IL in Minnesota, Kevin. Byron Buxton and Alex Kirilloff hit the IL. Trevor Larnach got the call up on Saturday. Will you be going after him, or is this just another guy that you expect to be outbid on?
Yes, and yes. That's the way it usually works with these guys. I am not as big on Larnach as some are. I think he's going to be a really fine outfielder for the Twins, but I just... In the minor leagues, he had, I think, 2019 was his best season, and between high A and double A, 540 some plate appearances, 13 home runs, 4 stolen bases. I know he's projected to develop more power, but the intriguing thing and the nice thing about it, if you do already roster Larnach, or if you do acquire him tomorrow evening, is they put him right in the 5 spot today. Yeah, he went 0-for-4, but they put him right in there where they had Kirilloff hitting. That's a nice thing. He'll be in the middle of the order if you do have him on your roster. And yeah, I'm gonna make a bid, but I'm not gonna go crazy because I'm a little lower on him than most.
And you're so right. I'll tell you this about the Twin system. They've got these three big plodding, power hitting first base corner outfield guys in Larnach, Kirilloff, and Brett Rooker. Right. And like at any given time, one of them might show why they deserve more playing time. But like in Kirilloff's case, that injury really stinks because they have a lot of guys who do exactly what he does on this roster already. Max Kepler is basically what you're kind of hoping Kirilloff will be. Right. Except like Kepler's a better fielder. Like he doesn't have 30 grade speed. Right. Like in terms of fielding ability, like he can sprint a little faster than that, but he's slow. Like they've got these huge plotting guys and I'm in the same boat. I'm going to bid to see if I can get him, but no one's going to let me have him for $7. So I won't get him.
Yeah. But it's also really, that's every point is always make your bids. Like never just skip out on bids. Always do it at the very least. As long as your roster can handle it, throw out those keep your honest bids. Nobody should be getting Larnach for $7. Scott said, make sure at least you're the one throwing in the $7 bid. So if anybody's going to do it, it'll be you. All right, Scott, Colin Moran left Saturday's game with an apparent injury in Pittsburgh. If he misses any time, is there anybody on the Pirates that it's worth watching for extra playing time?
You know, I want to apologize to the family of Colin Moran because I feel like I'm always bashing the guy every time I talk about him. He's a fine professional baseball player, but for fantasy purposes, he's a streaky platoon bat. We told this exact same story last year in April. He hit well, right? Because he ran into some softer righties, and he'll do that. He'll do this every once in a while. But to me, Colin Moran himself was barely worth watching, right? So whoever they bring up to replace him probably isn't really worth it for me. Like the only players on this team I'm really watching is, unfortunately, Gregory Polanco got injured, like surprise, right? Tell me another story that I've never heard before, right? He got hurt, and then we're still waiting on Cambryan Hayes. I like what like Brian Reynolds is doing, but there's very few leagues where he's still available. Right. And even him as like a fringy and a 12 teamer, he's like a fringy fourth, fifth outfielder because he's mostly batting average and not much else because that lineup doesn't give him a lot of guys to drive in. Like, long story short, no, there's no one I'm really watching. I wasn't really watching Moran, to be honest with you.
I'm glad I could bring this news to the forefront for you then. Kevin, in Boston, Enrique Hernandez was placed on the 10-day IL with a right hamstring strain and should miss a decent amount of time there. Michael Chavis was called up to Boston to replace him. Are you considering filling a bench spot with the multi-position eligible Chavis?
Yes, and more importantly, some of my draft champions and draft and hold leagues are pretty excited about this. He's someone I was drafting very late at the end of last year in some of the early drafts. Off to a nice start, home run already in his first game. We know the strikeouts are the issue with multi-positional eligibility. If he can just make some contact and stick in the lineup, Arroyo has done a decent job, but he's outperforming anything he's done in his career thus far, and it wasn't much other than a nice batting average. I think Chavis in there, it gives him an opportunity to score more runs. And if that keeps him in the lineup and he can keep the strikeouts down, then absolutely, I'm definitely interested.
Well, I've got one of those draft champion type leagues. I've had Chavis in my line, in my active lineup for the last 3 weeks, just because of that roster is so devastated, at least in the outfield. And so when I got that news, when he came up as the 27th man in a doubleheader, I was ecstatic.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now that he's up for a while, I actually have 5 active major league outfielders on that team. So that's good.
Nice.
You draft like 15 of them. You're like, there's no way I won't have an active one. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, so I wonder how I'm going to do next year.
All right. Another outfielder, an outfielder returning from the IL in Detroit, Scott, is Nomar Mazara, sending your boy Victor Reyes down to AAA to make room. Question is, do you care and should we?
As a Tigers fan, I barely care. As a fantasy manager, I don't at all. The fun fact about Mazara that I have is that the Rangers dumped him for Willie Calhoun, right? Mazara had this 100 RBI season for no good reason, right? It just kind of worked out for him and hit 20 home runs or so. Fun fact, he's actually younger than Willie Calhoun by like a handful of months, right? Like they were just tired of him because he's been up since he was like 12 years old or whatever. But not that interested. The Tigers offense, it's like coming back to life. But that doesn't mean it's good, right? It's not. At best, this means that Akil, they sent down Victor Reyes, which means they weren't going to send down Akil Baddoo. They probably weren't anyway, because they were just going to hold him as a Rule 5. If you remember, Victor Reyes was a Rule 5. They let him stay up, and he was atrocious the year that he was selected as a Rule 5. So there's not really much news on the Tigers because you can barely roster any of them to begin with. Jamer Candelario, but he's like just now getting a little bit of power. Only the batting average has been good. Willie Castro's been rough. Like the whole team's been bad. I know. I keep watching it. It's been horrible. No, not really caring as a fantasy player.
All right. Good to know.
All that hurts, Scott. I'm a Mazara believer still for some unknown reason. I actually had him down as the guy to pick up for power this week, a little later in the show. I just, it's all about the ground ball rates, right? He's one of those guys. The two guys I always bring up, because they were very similar players at the same time, were Christian Yelich and Eric Hosmer. We know what Yelich did, and we know what Hosmer did. Hosmer kept beating the ball into the ground. Yelich went on to become Christian Yelich. And I just, Mazara is still, you alluded to it. He's been around since he's 12 years old. He's got all of these Major League Baseball plate appearances. And he just turned 26 years old a couple of weeks ago. I still think there's a chance for him.
He might be the only 26-year-old that everybody's tired of.
Yeah.
Right? The most bizarre thing. It's like this 26-year-old with 328 career RBI, right? Like, he's actually been like a useful major league player for most of those years. Because he came up when he was 21, played a whole season. And like, everyone's like, yeah, whatever, he's no good. It was rough. And it happened fast, right? Like, Texas got rid of him, and then he went to Chicago, was terrible, came to Detroit, has been rough, really bizarre. But you're right, it is that ground ball rate, because he hits the ball fairly hard, right? Like, even right now, his hard hit rate is high in the few games that we've seen him in. His expected slugging's 551. There's power there, but, like, he also puts it in the ground too much.
Yeah, I think the intriguing thing, it's only been 40 plate appearances before the injury, so 40 plate appearances plus today. Not a lot to look at. But his strikeout percentage is down, his reach rate is down, his contact percentage is up. So there are some encouraging things there.
All right, we'll see where he goes or how much he goes for this week in Fab, and we can even talk about it a little bit later. But Kevin, the last thing I got on my list here is, please stop me if you've heard this before, and I expect to be stopped very quickly. Kevin Kiermaier got hurt. He left Saturday's game with the left wrist sprain. No timetable for his return. Those x-rays were negative, so that is good news. If he misses any time, should we expect anybody in the Tampa outfield to get any extra at-bats? And if so, who are you looking at?
I think they'll be spread pretty evenly. They move guys around anyway. And Brett Phillips has been seeing more playing time of late already. It's been surprising. He's typically, throughout his time with Tampa and Kansas City, he's been a late inning defensive replacement and pinch runner. He's been starting some games already. Probably will continue to do so. Yeah, I don't see a whole lot changing for the Tampa lineup.
All right, well, that's going to do it for our news and notes section. As always, we try to keep it to topics that might affect your Fab bidding considerations for this coming Sunday. And so we will move on now to our quick focus topic. We're going to talk to Kevin and Scott about DFS and how that might affect how you put your bids in for Fab. So, Scott, you do a lot of work, a lot of recommendations, along with Rick Holman over on the PL Shorts podcast, which everybody should be listening to, now coming out on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Pitcher List podcast network. So keep an eye out for that or ear out for that. But tell me, Scott, is there anything about the work that you put in to doing DFS recommendations that you have found that you can translate into maybe not the Fab recommendations that you might be making on the side, but just on the Fab decision making that you're making on a week to week basis in your weekly leagues, never mind your any daily moves that you're making in daily move leagues?
Yeah, so playing DFS has helped me a lot because you can think of DFS as like this unlimited waiver wire, right? Because you've got this salary and every player is available, right? And so there's two real things that it taught me to pay a lot more attention to that I wasn't doing as a sort of a player pre-DFS. So what I used to do, and it's okay if you still do this, right? We're going to help you. We're going to get you through this. But a lot of people who need something, the first thing they do is they go to their waiver wire and they sort by best performances for the last 2 weeks, last 30 days, last 7 days, something like that. Let me tell you, there could not be a less useful way to do this, right? Because that profit was already made, right? You don't get those stats they got in the last 2 weeks, right? It'll tell you a little bit about who's hot, but if you play DFS and just use the players that are hot, you're not going to win any money, right? There's two things I'm actually looking for more. The first is lineup position. Lineup position matters huge in DFS, right? Because more at-bats is more opportunity for points. If you're a points league player, like, you should absolutely care where these players hit in the lineup. There's lots of ways to keep track of who's hitting where in lineups. You know, in the batter's box, Adam writes on it. I write on it. We are looking at where players are hitting. Mike Kirkland, who's over at Fantrax, he's got a lot of trackers on how you can keep an eye on this. Roster Resource has it. Look to see where guys are hitting. Who's really interesting to me? Not a guy who's been hot the last 2 weeks, but a guy who's hitting first right now. Whoa, this guy got moved to second. A player that I like, and players that I might want to let go of are guys that, like, man, yeah, he was hitting second. Now he's hitting seventh, right? That's a problem, right? Those are the things you really want to watch. It's one of the reasons that I've been hesitant on the upside of Nico Horner, because he keeps batting at the bottom of that lineup. He's got to be at the top of it for his skill set to really be useful. And it's why I'm a lot rosier now on Nick Madrigal than I was to start the season. To start the season, he looked like a number nine hitter for them. Now he's like up in the 2-3, right? Now a lot of things have happened to make that the case, but that lineup position thing matters so much. And it's also worth looking at that player skill set, the speed, slappy contact guys, the David Fletchers, Luis Arraez, Nick Madrigal. They need to be at the top of the lineup or they're fairly worthless to you because they're not going to get any counting stats. It's going to be empty batting average. So where they hit in the lineup, that's really big. And then I'm also looking a lot at schedule, right? When you play DFS, one of the most important things about any player, like, there's their salary. Yeah, that matters. Who they are, that matters. Who are they playing against, right? Everything in DFS is about, I need to pick my pitchers and I need to attack the bad pitchers, right? That's really how you build teams. And when you need a 1 week, you know, so when I talked about Mike Ford earlier in the show, the first thing I did is I looked at who's he playing for the next week, right? Because I can talk about Mike Ford as this abstract guy, but I only care about Mike Ford for the next week, right? Like up to 10 days, before guys like Odor and Voit come back. So I'm looking right at that schedule, who's going to play, and there wasn't that many pitchers I really wanted to attack. Right now, again, if he had started out with the Orioles and was like the back end of that rotation, absolutely. Give me that lefty against those weak right-handed pitchers and this tiny little bandbox in Camden. Absolutely. But that's not happening, right? He's getting fairly average matchups, so I'm out, right? But a lot of times, just pat myself on the back a little bit. About a week ago, I was like, oh, you know who I really want? And I mentioned this in the batter's box. I need to get Brandon Belt. He's healthy. He's not currently concussed. That's a big plus, right? And the biggest thing was he's going to Colorado. He's hot and he's going to Colorado. So even if he doesn't play that well in like the weekend, he's probably going to rack it up in Colorado. And what's he do? He hits like 7 RBI in like one game, right? That's a lucky hit. I didn't expect it to be that good, but it doesn't take a genius to be like, oh, this player's hot and going to the Coors, right? I should pick him up. But if you were only sorting by, oh, he's been hot recently, but it's just Brandon Belt, because you weren't looking at the schedule. You got to look at the schedule. He hits in the middle of the lineup. That was the first thing we talked about. Two, he's going to Coors against bad Coors pitchers, right? Like, perfect combination. So that's how it really informs me on FAB. It's a great way, like, using that DFS strategy. It not only helps you with some of the bigger bids, although that's more of a scouting thing. It's those $2 bids that get you through this week, right? You're looking at a bunch of scrap heap outfielders because you need that fifth spot. You can look a little bit about who's hot. Go look at who they're playing. Go look where they hit in the lineup, right? Number 9 hitting outfielder isn't going to help you. But if you go and grab a guy that's maybe, for whatever reason, hitting leadoff or maybe hitting 6th instead of 9th, that's where that profit is. That's what I think you got to do. That's how DFS helped me personally in managing my FAB bids.
Yeah, I think that you talk about, you don't get the stats that already happened, right? You don't get the stuff that happened in the last 2 weeks. We talked about this when, you know, Tyler Naquin was the big name on campus on the FAB bidding. It's like you're going to overbid for somebody and you're not going to get all those home runs he hit. You might get whatever he gets but coming up, but the more important thing was the fact that he was going to turn back into that fourth outfielder once Jesse Winker was back, once the rest of the outfield was back to where it was, where you expected it to be. Kevin, you play your fair share of DFS as well. Do you find it useful when you're getting to the point of writing your FAB article every Sunday?
Absolutely. And for the exact reasons that Scott mentioned. One, you see who is in the lineup and where they are in the lineup every day. And after 2 or 3 days, you say, oh, there's a trend here, and this isn't where he was hitting earlier in the season. So you take note and things like that. And with the schedule for me, it really comes into play with the pitchers. We talk so much on this show, and everybody talks about 2-start pitchers all the time. And I'm looking at the schedule and the opponent's strikeout rates and their platoon splits of strikeout rates is what I'm looking at the most when I'm looking ahead at 2-start pitchers. We joked earlier in the season about picking on Pittsburgh. The last couple of weeks, I've been picking on Detroit and Texas, right? They are the 2 worst strikeout teams in the league by a pretty good amount. So that's the type of thing that we're looking at a daily basis in DFS, and it really helps looking ahead that way in our season-long leagues and with our FAB pickups as well.
Yeah, it seems like it also seems as though that DFS is really beneficial to players that don't have a ton of season-long leagues. So a lot of people play like in 20 leagues, and that's great because if you diversify your players, you get to keep an eye on a larger group of players throughout the course of the season to make adjustments on different rosters based on what you've been seeing on each team. But if you only play in 1 or 2, 3 leagues per year, if you're running all your eggs in that basket, playing a lot of DFS seems like it's like drafting early and often, or draft and hold leagues or best ball leagues, because you get to learn the player pool better throughout the course of the draft season or pre-draft season. And doing DFS kind of allows you to do the same thing. You guys both touched on, you're able to watch all these players all the time, especially if you're playing on a regular basis.
You're waiting for the lineup for every single team to come out every single day. You can't wait for the lineup to be posted. Exactly.
All right, so that's really good. So I think that if you guys are out there and you are playing a little DFS here or there, and you're not already utilizing the tools that we have over at Pitcher List, and you're not listening to Scott and Rich over at PL Shorts for their recommendations, you really should start. And it could obviously help you as well come Sundays when you're making your FAB bids. So speaking of FAB bids, we'll get right into it from here. We'll get into our recommendations for the fab bidding process coming up on Sunday evening. And as always, we go category by category, what you guys might be looking for, what you might need to help your roster, whether it's to fill an injury in a different position. And it's always good to fill an injury of a guy who you just lost a bunch of speed with another guy who is going to give you some more speed, unless there's just no options out there. So we'll start, as we always do, in the power department. Kevin, you alluded to one of your recommendations a little earlier, Nomar Mazara. Why don't you try to talk Scott into Nomar Mazara a little bit more, and then we'll move on to other options that we might see.
Being a Detroit fan, I'm not going to be able to talk him into it. And unless Mazara starts playing really well, I'm not going to be able to talk him into it ahead of time. And it, to me, it's just, I think he's been better than we realize. And it's expectations, right? As a 22-year-old in 2017, he had the 100 RBI season that Scott mentioned earlier. And so everybody was like, oh, he had a 20% strikeout rate, a 9% walk rate, hit 253. This guy doing this at 22 years old, he's going to be a superstar. He hasn't been. He hit 20 home runs again the next season in 20 less games. So there was a bit of a boost in the power department, and another 19 home runs and even less games in 2019. So this is a situation here where I'm tossing out that White Sox 2020. One is the White Sox, it's the COVID season, and I'm looking at four seasons from a 26-year-old where he's hit 19 or 20 home runs in as little as 116 games, at the most 148 games. And if he starts hitting the ball in the air just a little more often, 2019 he had the longest home run of the season, I believe. Scott did mention that he hits the ball hard earlier as well. I think he had the longest home run of the 2019 season. He hits the ball extremely hard. He hasn't since these injury issues of 2020 and now 2021 so far. But I'm not giving up on him. He's worth a stash. He's only 5% rostered in TGFBI, 1% in Yahoo. So he's definitely available in most every league out there. And if I need a power guy, that's where I'm going this week.
So you actually didn't have to work that hard. As much as I alluded to the fact that I don't like him long term, in the short term, if we want to talk about the things we were talking about with DFS, Nomar Mazara, when he plays for the Tigers, he bats right in the middle of that lineup. There's actually this little collection of like switch and lefties that hit between fifth and eighth for the Tigers that I actually this week, because they're going to see the Royals, and the Royals don't do super well against left-handed hitters. They're also going to see the Cubs, who they can manage them a little better, but they're by no means shutting them down, right? So they have a nice light, like a nice stretch of games coming up all at home for their left-handed hitters, and a nice park where these guys don't always have like, yeah, Mazara has power, but like sometimes it's more doubles power than home run power. Even at his peak, he was only hitting like 20-something home runs. They're going to get a chance to rope a lot of doubles against these weaker pitchers. And so him, Akil Baddoo, who is obviously not as hot as he was to start the season, but he has been making some nice adjustments at the plate. Nico Goodrum is another guy who has some power. He's better against lefties than he is righties. And maybe even Willy Castro. I'm not going to go into that much because I don't believe quite so much. It's not been good so far. But Mazara, Goodrum, Baddoo, for sure. These are sneaky little ads in deep leagues because they've got a nice slate of games coming up all at home. An offense that is picking up later. And again, I like the specific matchups. Mazara is the best one because he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. But really, there's several of them that are there that are viable as these back end outfielders who could hit for some power, be it doubles or home runs, in this home stretch against softer right-handed pitching.
All right, Scott, is there anybody else that you might be looking at? Maybe specifically, hopefully, in the outfield as well, because as we continue to see outfield, especially in five outfield leagues, or leagues that have five outfield spots, has been really difficult to keep full, as I mentioned earlier in my draft and hold league, that one alone. Is there anybody that you got your eye on for this coming Fab period?
Yeah, it actually was Nico Goodrum, right? Like, as much as I joked in the Discord that it wouldn't be Nico Goodrum, I saw that we were going to do the DFS thing. I was like, all right, this is what I do for DFS. And I was like, I should actually do that. I should actually go look and see like how this works. Nico Goodrum does bat like towards the middle-ish of the lineup. Sometimes it's a little bit lower, but he's been hot, so he's up to six. Look, he strikes out a lot. Even when he's hot, he strikes out a lot, right? He's striking out like two times a game right now. But he does have some pop in there. He does have a little bit of speed. This is not a great week for him for speed. The Royals are pretty good at cutting down runners. The Cubs are pretty good at cutting down runners because they've got David Ross in the dugout making sure they do that. But he's a guy that I think could hit you some power. He can do some things, especially if Mazzara can hit and then Nico Goodrum can drive him in. That'd be a really nice 1-2 there with Candelario ahead of them hitting. I love Cabbie. I really do. Like in my heart, I'm a big Tigers fan, but he's not hitting well. He's getting a little better, but yeah, Nico Goodrum, especially because even if you're not, don't need him in the outfield, you can still use him in several spots in a lot of different leagues. So yeah, Nico Goodrum, let's get those Tigers, baby. Here we go.
Yeah, Nico Goodrum makes my speed list on my Need for Speed article ever so often, especially when he has good matchups. Not this week for the points that you mentioned. Of course, in NFBC, he is available in second base and shortstop, not available in the outfield in NFBC, but pretty much available in the outfield in almost every other platform out there. 46% rostered in TGFBI, only started in 27% of leagues as well. So fully available. Definitely available in my league as I'm looking at him right now as well. And so let's get into that question that we got on the Discord revolving around Nico Goodrum. And that was comparing Nico Goodrum to Luis Urias over in Milwaukee. Kevin, if you had to choose for a middle infielder to fill that role, fill a hole, which one of these guys are you looking at?
This is a tough one. Because I want to say Urias, but I can't. I really thought they traded Orlando Arcia. I really thought this was because they really believe in Urias and it was going to work out. And I'd rather have Goodrum, I think. And that's the issue here. For every reason Scott just brought up, especially with the schedule, I liked Urias when he was in San Diego, and maybe that's why I'm hanging on. I love his walk rate. His strikeout rate is up a little bit during the shortened 2020 and in 2021, and he's just not hitting. And so as much as I would like to say it's him, it's not. It's Goodrum.
Yeah, surprisingly, Urias is 100% rostered in TGFBI. So if this is a 15-team league decision, that decision has already been made for you. Goodrum is the only option you're going to see on your wire between the two. But if you go down to a 12-team league, there's a good chance that both of these guys are available. So keeping that in mind when you are looking for middle infield help in that realm. All right. In the power, so that's a couple of different guys that can fill in a little bit more power. Kevin, anybody else on your mind as maybe a Mazzara doesn't seem like the type that would need technically a backup bid per se, but it's always nice to be able to have a couple guys in mind to be putting backup bids on. It helps, as we talked about in previous episodes, of course, it helps you bring down the cost of what you're looking to do. So is there anybody that you're looking to maybe back up Mazzara with if they're available in your 15 teamers?
Yeah, it's another guy we alluded to earlier. It's Chavis. Those are the two guys, probably my, and I'm going to put him as a backup bid and then also a bid on his own. I wouldn't mind getting both of them in the leagues where I have the spots. They're two guys I'm definitely after both this week.
Chavis, of course, at least in NFBC, available at first, second, and outfield. So that's a nice little bench spot. We talked about guys like Marwin Gonzalez, and the Red Sox have a bunch of players like this, as Alex Cora alluded to in the preseason, how it's really nice to have that flexibility. So when a guy like Enrique Hernandez does go in the IL, they can mix and match a little bit easier and still be able to hold an extra pitcher on the roster. So 7% rostered in TGFBI. So plenty available even in your 15 teamers, as he hasn't played all season, so it's not too much of a surprise. And has in Boston, of course, has a full 7-game stretch coming up with games against in Baltimore, against, and then the rest in Fenway against the Athletics and Angels. All right, Scott, you got anybody else to throw in the mix or any comments on Chavis?
No, I think we're desperate enough. I think that's good.
That's fair.
Yeah.
All right, I will throw out a couple speed options. I'd love to get your guys' take on these guys. These are the guys that made my Need for Speed stolen base streaming article that came out on Saturday. Two of these guys are basically 12 team options. And that's Michael A. Taylor, who I talked about last week, who did get caught stealing last week, but of course he's playing for Kansas City. So they're going to let him continue to run as Kansas City continues to be near the top of the leaderboards in stolen base attempts and stolen base opportunities taken as a percentage, at least. And then Miguel Rojas, who is just killing the ball in Miami, as we talked about before, as both of you guys alluded to, leading off for Miami on a regular basis, getting plenty of at-bats. Miami, another team that loves to run. Both these guys have really good matchups for stealing bases coming up as well, especially with Rojas going into Los Angeles, where Will Smith and Austin Barnes lead the league as a battery pairing in stolen bases allowed, with 36 bases allowed to be stolen so far this season. I love Rojas as a pickup in 12 teamers right now, especially with the full slate he has as well coming into this week. And then in the 15 teamer, I think we mentioned him a little bit last week as well. Sam Haggerty in Seattle, it's getting a little bit of extra run. I don't expect that to really go crazy. And so I don't expect him to play every game. He has 6 games this coming week. 2 of them are in Los Angeles as well to start the week. So that's nice. So even if the thing about Haggerty is that even if he doesn't start all these games, he comes in as a pinch runner, he comes in as a pinch hitter. And if he if he's given just a couple of opportunities with second base open in front of him, he's probably going to take it. And if you are in a situation where you're just desperate to fill a body in your outfield, you know, I like Haggerty as that fill in. He's not more than $1 to $3 bid. Me personally, I love bidding like $2 or $3 and never that $1. Cause it's like, if I want that guy, I want him. I'm just going to get him over the guy who's just throwing in $1 bid. And I'm not going to blink an eye. So I like these guys. I mentioned JP Crawford, Matt Duffy, and John Birdie have decent schedules for stolen bases. Crawford had a good game the other day. Not somebody I expect to help you long term. But again, he's also playing the Dodgers. Anytime you can go right now with Will Smith and Austin Barnes throwing the way they are behind the plate, that's an opportunity for some decent speed options on the base pass. What are your guys' take on these guys and or any options that I might have missed?
I love the Rojas.
I think it's great.
Yeah. Yep. Love the Rojas call. And what I like about it is that he's not this guy who's like a 20 stolen base guy that's just out there, right? So the more obvious one here, who probably is actually rostered in more leagues, despite, well, not in more leagues in TGFBI, but more leagues in Yahoo probably, even though he's not been as good, is John Birdie, right? Because John Birdie's known as this guy that if he plays, he can steal 20, 30 bases. Rojas can't, right? He's just not that fast. These guys that steal 10 bases, they do them at very specific times. It's actually fairly predictable in a way to know when they're going to do it. And it's week like this where the Marlins get these soft batteries where they can actually steal bases, right? Even John Birdie, I think it was in 2019, he stole 4 bases in a game. And we knew he would because it was against the Mets and they couldn't stop anybody. They had Wilson Ramos behind the plate. It was like I think it was Syndergaard on the mound who like takes forever to get the ball in. It was ridiculous. Like we watch it like, oh, he's going to steal now. Like everybody knew. I think even Ramos and Thor knew. And they're like, we better let him go. There's nothing we could do about it. He's just going to steal. So I really like that call because people are going to think they're either going to look at, oh, who's projected to steal the most bases for the rest of the season out of these guys. Or they're going to say, who already has the most stolen bases? Rojas isn't either of those, but he's leading off for a team that doesn't hit super well, right? He's a guy that really gets to first base and not a whole lot further all the time, right? He's like more of a walker and a slap guy. So I do think he steals a base this week, at least one, if not two. And he's doing other stuff too. It's great. He's contributing the hits. He's doing it all. He's not just like this speed only rabbit kind of player.
Yeah, John Birdie was a call out last week with him getting more playing time, pretty much everyday playing time at third base and getting that extra eligibility. But now that Brian Anderson is back taking over that role, John Birdie has only started 3 of the last 6 games. So it's tough. I grabbed Birdie for quite a bit of money last week, hoping that he would just keep going. And he has so many positions of eligibility, at least in NFBC, or especially in NFBC, that I'm going to hold on to him as well to see if he can find his way into the lineup more and he can just be that flexible bench piece that I've got. I love calling him out for his speed and just wish Miami found a way to play him pretty much every day.
Haggerty scares me here, and it's because Kelenic's coming. We don't know what day. if that's on Monday or Tuesday and you're in a weekly lineup league, he's lucky to get one more start the rest of the week, right? He was, his playing time has upped a little bit, but he was playing about half the games. Kelenic shows up, and that's going down to 1 to 2 games a week if he stays on the roster. So that one scares me, especially with word that we are going to see Kelenic by the end of the month. It's the 8th, so we're getting close. The new week starts on the 10th. I would be scared to put him in a lineup where it's set for an entire week.
Yeah, that's fair. Haggerty will easily turn into a Roman Quinn type where even just being on the roster, he'll get stolen bases, but he'll hurt you everywhere else because he's not starting. He's coming in as a pinch runner, stealing a base, and that's about it. Maybe he tags in a run or two, but that's totally fair.
Yeah, if there's one other guy that came to mind for me, it was probably, he's probably not available in some of the deeper leagues, but Adam Frazier, another guy who doesn't steal a ton of bases. This is just a matchup play, right? So the Pirates are going to get the Reds and the Giants, neither team super great at getting runners out. It's actually not a great week for him on the hitting side, but he does bat at the top of this lineup for a team that doesn't. It's like this perfect storm, right? A team that isn't winning a lot of games, doesn't score a lot of runs, top of the lineup, decent matchups. And I was on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. We talked a little bit about stolen bases, and it's such an opportunistic thing. Like, one of the reasons we're not seeing as many is because these teams have these analytic departments, and those analytic departments realize that stealing base, like a stolen base attempt, is only a good idea in very finite situations. Very limited. It's like a limited use tool unless you have an Alberto Mondesi type of player who can steal even when it's like the other team knows he's going to steal. Right? This actually isn't very many players, right? If you look at Ramon Laureano, he stole a bunch of bases in the beginning of the season and he stopped, right? But that's situational because the A's were losing every single game and they needed him to steal bases. And then they started winning every single game and they didn't, right? Robbie Grossman wasn't stealing a lot of bases right off the bat because they were like this competitive offense, and then they weren't at all. So what do? They start running Robbie Grossman, right? Like, AJ Hinch knows he doesn't have a playoff team, but he doesn't want to lose every day. Right. So he takes his guys like, look, Robbie Grossman, you're not that fast, but you're pretty smart. Just go, man. Just go. Try to get to second because we sure as heck ain't going to hit you there. You really want to look for this kind of thing when you're just trying to get a couple steals. Right. You're trying to fill in a spot for a week at a time with a couple steals. Adam Frazier's that kind of guy. Harrison Bader is a guy who the Cardinals have a nice little matchup, especially towards the end of the week against the Padres and the Brewers coming up. He could steal a couple bases, one or two, right? Like, these aren't guys that are going to steal 4 or 5 bases. But if you're looking for a guy who's going to steal 4 or 5 bases and he's actually available, you're dumping a lot of money in FAB, right? If we all know a guy's going to steal a bunch of bases, we're going to go buy him. You know, so sometimes you can get by for a couple weeks with these sneaky little, I think there's 1 or 2 stolen bases in here this week and not bad stuff elsewhere. Like, at least Harrison Bader also has a bit of pop. It's a tough pitching matchup for him. He's got tough pitchers he's going to face, but he might hit a home run on accident and he might steal a base, because if he gets on, they're going to send him because they're facing tough pitchers all week, St. Louis is. So those are the kind of things I think about when I'm like, I just need a couple steals.
That's a great point, because if you get a guy in there for a spot start, you're just using him for a week, and he gets one stolen base, that's a 26 stolen base guy that you had in your lineup for that week. He gets your 2, that's a 50 stolen base guy over a season that you had in your lineup that week. Right? The 3 or 4 a week, even for the guys that do lead the league in stolen bases, don't happen very often. You're just looking for 1 or 2. And so if you hit on that's a huge hit, actually.
Oh, that's huge, right? So Mondesi is harder to use in head-to-head leagues, like these weekly head-to-head leagues, because he builds you this. He has this week where he steals like 5 bases and you win that category by 4, right? But you don't get to carry those on forward, right? Right. They get wiped. And then he doesn't steal a base for a week, because that's super normal. Even the fastest guys, they don't steal a base every single day, right? Like, we don't have Ricky Henderson anymore, you know? But Billy Hamilton only stole like 16 seasons a lot, but they play 162 times, right? And they have games where they have multiple steals. There's plenty of games where they don't steal. So, you know, in head-to-head leagues, those guys lose value because you don't get to carry them over. In Roto, exactly to Kevin's point, like, they all count. Every stolen base counts. You need every single one. And getting one in a week, if it'd be amazing if you could actually stream a steal a week.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
But that's way more feasible than trying to find a guy right now who's going to steal 30, right? Trying to stream 30 bases by the end of the season is way more feasible, and you'll probably get better results, right? Because if there's a guy out there right now in your league that can steal 30 bases and he's on the wire, it's because he can't hit, That's why he's there, right? Billy Hamilton's out there because he can't hit. He's terrible at it. He can't walk either. He can't do any of that stuff. He can just run, right? Terrence Gore can only run. He's a pinch runner. I don't think he has a position. I don't think they let him have a glove, right? He just runs. They just get him cleats and a jersey. Those guys, like, those are the guys, if you're just looking at who can steal the most bases by the end of the season. But you don't care about the end of the season yet. You care about next week. That bid, sometimes they're long term, right? Those are the big bids. But the little bids, those are like, who do I need right now? I got that huge hit on Yuli Gurriel in 2019 in June, right before he went off, because I needed a guy that week, right? Because that's what I was thinking about. And sometimes that stuff pays off, right? Now, when I bid a whole bunch on Zach Gallen, it was because I wanted a long-term guy. That's why I was willing to bid, like, I think it was 200 something when he was available. I wanted that. I'll bid. But you can keep buying these little guys, get profit. You bid $2 a fab and you got $4 worth of profit. It's a weird conversion to try to do it that way. But the concept is you just get that little bit of profit when you can, just a little bit, almost uncontested, right? If Adam Frazier is in your league in a 12 team league and you just need to steal, right? He's a little hard to use in a 12 team league, but this is when you do it, right? And no one's bidding with you. Nobody. Like, I don't know how many people listen to this podcast, but most teams in your league don't have room, right? Like, they don't care, right? They're searching by who's got the most stolen bases the last 2 weeks. That's what they're doing. What you're doing is smarter. You're looking at Miguel Rojas. You're looking at Adam Frazier. You're looking at these guys that will steal you a base or two, and then you go find someone else, right? We talk about streaming pitchers all the time. You can stream anything. You can stream any position, any category you want, as long as you're smart about it.
That's a great point, Scott. And I also like the Harrison Bader call out as well, as he's starting. Granted, starting the bottom third of that order for the Cardinals, but he is playing every day in center field, and he has a six-game set coming up, where Adam Frazier does have the full seven-game set coming up throughout the course of the week as well. So two good call-outs there as well. All right, and then I think we talked a lot about different guys who have a really good opportunity in both of these categories, but is there any other random bats that either one of you guys are looking at that just simply have good opportunities ahead of them, whether it be just lots of playing time that they've just fallen into, lots of extra playing time, extra positional flexibility they might have just gotten, or just really good pitching matchups or park factors, stuff like that? Kevin, is there anybody that kind of fits that bill for you that you have your eye on?
There's one guy that we've talked about him before, and he's not having a very good year, but if you need at bats, this would be a deep league play, or he's probably rostered in NL only leagues. But Nick Ahmed is available in most 15 team mixed leagues. He hasn't had a very good season, but Arizona has 7 games this week and next week. So if you're in a bind and you need an infielder that's going to play every day, he's a guy that I would hope is going to improve here shortly. We keep saying it's early. It is still early. We're only a little over a month in. He's a guy that, one of those guys that's always there on the wire when we need him. And with 14 games in the next 14 days, hopefully he scores some runs and drives some in for your counting stats.
Yeah, I'm playing every day at shortstop, again, in the bottom third of that lineup, but you're playing every day. That's going to help your chances at the very least, especially in this day and age where, you know, there's platoons up the wazoo across the league. All right, we'll move on to our pitcher recommendations, starting with the counting stats, wins, and Ks. Guys who obviously might have 2 starts coming up this coming week, and we'll get to our future 2 starters a little bit later. Guys that you think might be able to vulture a win as a follower, who have a nice schedule coming up, or just one really good single matchup. Maybe they're going to play Cleveland and they're almost guaranteed to get a no-hit bid. So that's an option. And so, Scott, I'll start with you. Is there any, what pitchers are you looking at this week to stream and or maybe add, maybe be a Zach Gallen type if you've got an eye on somebody like that?
Yeah, that'd be cool, right?
Yeah,
I don't have any of those, unfortunately, at the moment. The one thing I am thinking of, and I'm glad you led right into it, the Mariners are going to get 4 shots at Cleveland this week. And it's 4 guys who are somewhat interesting, right? Like, the most interesting to me is Yusei Kikuchi, because, you know, he can be a bit, as what Nick would say, like a cherry bomb. He can blow up sometimes. But if he's available in your league, and he probably is in quite a few, like, 12 teamers and stuff like that, he'll have a chance for the no hit against Cleveland. Chris Flexen, the KBO transplant, he's been a little hit and miss as well, but again, it's Cleveland, and they have this little habit of not getting any hits, right? Because really right now with Cleveland, you have to get Jose Ramirez out three times, right? If you do that, you're looking real good. Like, even if you walk him once, it's fine. Right? You got a shot. And Justice Sheffield is also pitching. He's going to go on Sunday. He's actually a two-starter. I like him a lot. I don't want to get too much into two-start stuff, but Sheffield – oh, actually, I'm sorry. He's not two-starter. He's going to go Sunday. They're off Monday. So he's only one starter. But even then, Sheffield, lefty against Cleveland, I'm taking it. I'm taking just about anyone. Not so big on Newsom just because I don't know him very well. And I don't stream guys I don't know, right? The one reason I dodged that Austin Gomber bomb was because I didn't really know him. And I let him go. Right. Some people did know him. They bid on him. I'm not saying they were wrong. Like, the results ended up being wrong, but they might have had a good process. Mine was, I don't know this guy. So I'm moving on. But I do know Justice Sheffield. I do know Yusei Kikuchi. I do know Chris Flexen. And while they're not great pitchers, like full season, they've got Cleveland, and, you know, Cleveland keeps getting no hit.
Yeah, that's true. And it's hard for Seattle too to get those two starters in a week, just because typically they are still going with a 6-man rotation. As I was reminded a couple of weeks ago, as I was looking at Justin Dunn for a different matchup. Newsom not officially in the rotation per se, but still acting as that sixth man in that rotation. Kevin, you got a couple guys listed here. So why don't you talk a little bit about, it looks like in varying degrees of availability as well. So let's start with the least available guy and move your way deeper in who the guys you might be looking at.
The least available guy, as far as 15 teamers goes, is Luke Weaver, which is surprising because I like the other two guys better, and I think most people would. I think he was drafted in a lot of leagues, and people have been reluctant to let him go. But he's got a pretty decent week this week. Two starts at home, one versus Miami, the other versus Washington. He does have 15 strikeouts in 13 innings over his last three starts. He has given up a lot of runs in those three starts. So this is, like I said, this is my least favorite of the three, even though he is also the least available.
Yeah, Luke Weaver, like you said, 93% rostered in TGFBI. Surprisingly, he's just been carried over. He's just been held on to. He's only picked up in one league last week for a bid of $21, assuming that was in anticipation of this two-start week. As I talk about in my recap article, you can save a lot of money by looking at that a week ahead of time. And so, Kevin, let's take a look at the guys you like a little bit. You mentioned there's two other guys you like a little bit more who are much more widely available, at least in deeper leagues, making them probably more available as well in 12-teamers as well. Who are the other guys you're looking at?
Yeah, they're both almost universally available in 12-team leagues. And in Luis Garcia of the Astros is available in over half of TGFBI leagues. He's 42% rostered, 20 strikeouts in his last three starts over 15 and a third innings. That's what I'm looking at. And he's got the Texas Rangers we talked about earlier, one of the top strikeout teams in the league for their hitters. You do have to go against the Angels as well, a little tougher matchup. I'm willing to risk that matchup to get the Rangers at home for Garcia with the strikeouts that he's had over his last few starts. And your Martin Perez of your Boston Red Sox, this guy baffles me. I think he's better than any of us want to admit. 3.00 ERA over his last three, 15 innings pitched as well, 16 strikeouts, and they get at Baltimore. That one's tough, but the redeeming grace is there is he match up against Jorge Lopez. So I would expect the Boston offense to do more damage against Lopez than will be done against Martin Perez. It might take a bit of a hit on ratios there, but still get the win. And then back at home against the Angels, another not easy matchup, but Perez has been pitching pretty well. The at Baltimore and at home against the Angels typically might steer me away, but I'm still considering this one for this week.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you mentioned Luis Garcia of the Houston Astros, because I do feel like there's about 27 different Luis Garcias in the league right now. So I appreciate that clarification. I'm a Garcia fan as well. We talked about him with Toby a couple weeks ago. And assuming that he would get into that rotation spot with Odorizzi continuing to rehab and be on the shelf, I do worry about consistent innings that he might put up through as he goes along and having to continue to be built up. But he's, like you said, he's pitching well, and you get a Texas matchup regardless, unless the other matchup is in Colorado, to be honest. If you're matching up against Texas, it's an option for me for sure.
That's where I'm at.
All right. We talked about Martin Perez might hurt you on the ratios if he gets hit around in Baltimore. So let's talk about some options to counter that in the ratios department, whether they be long relievers that can chip away at your ERA and whip, or just a hot hand, a control guy that might not rack up the Ks, but you feel a little bit more confident in those ratio starts. Kevin, is there anybody that kind of fits that bill that you're looking at throwing a filler bid in on?
One guy that I typically like to use in this situation, and I think we've brought him up before. He had a start this week, and I'm trying to look it up real quick because I forgot to. I apologize. But Brent Suter is a guy that I like to use as a middle relief guy now and then for that exact reason. Two and a third as the starter, which we hope when we're using guys for this purpose, we don't want them to start because then we have no chance for the win. But he's still the guy that I go to. He's available in 90% of TGFBI leagues. So probably universally available in 12 teamers. And he's just a guy that I always fall back on in this situation.
Scott, do you find yourself taking a look at long relievers or relievers that are getting an opportunity to be stretched out in this situation to chip away at ERA? Or are you at this point in the season, are you mostly focusing just on those counting stats and you'll worry about the ratios later on?
So I do love using relievers when I don't have a streaming pitcher to use or something like that. Like, I do like to use a streaming pitcher if I can, but that's simply not always an option. I think a good pivot from there is, oh man, I couldn't find any of them. So, hey, you know what? I'll grab Jonathan Loaisiga. I know he just had a rough outing recently, but before then he'd been great, right? And the overall line's still pretty good. So sometimes I stream a reliever who has a weaker weaker matchups for that coming week. I look at their schedule. Hey, who's got seven games? I don't actually even care if they're a long reliever, right? I'll look at a seventh or an eighth inning guy if they've been good, right? So one guy right now, who I don't think he's going to get save chances, but he's been fairly good. I think he gave up a run in his last outing, but Josh Spores, right? So he's not owned anywhere. Nobody rosters this guy, at least in like ESPN or Yahoo. They might just now be picking him up, but he's been pitching well. He's striking guys out. And recently they've had a little bit of a softer schedule. It's not quite as soft coming up, but it's still viable. And if I can't find a guy, especially in a daily league, every day that you have someone in a pitcher spot who isn't starting, you're just wasting a spot. You're not getting stats there, right? And especially because a lot of these like head-to-head leagues don't have innings caps. They just have minimums, right? Some of them do have caps, but anyone that doesn't, you should be flipping them. You should be putting, hey, I can't find a starter. All right, I'll get a reliever. Right? Just throw them in because they have a chance. Yeah, I know sometimes you'll get burned, but sometimes you're going to pad yourself with an extra inning of no runs and a strikeout or two strikeouts, right? Sometimes that'll happen two or three times that week. And that's huge, right? That can be the difference. So I like Josh Spores. Another guy that just got activated. I don't know how they're going to use him. You could speculate that maybe he'll close. Maybe he'll be a seventh inning guy. Who knows? Because it's the Rays, but Pete Fairbanks just got activated. He's a guy that I like, but I don't know what he's going to do. So I can't say, oh, he might get save chances because he might, right? Diego Castillo just hit the IL, but I don't know what they're going to do because they don't know what they're going to do. I've said this before. The Rays don't know who they're going to, like right now with Castillo out, they don't know who's going to close in any given game. They're going to decide like in the eighth who's going to close, right? That said, Fairbanks is still, he's a good pitcher, right? Like he's a guy that can definitely go out there and strike out a side when you need him to. He and Spores, they're not long guys, but they're short guys who will throw a couple times a week.
Yeah, and knowing whether or not they're going to throw a couple times that week is key as well. So really keep an eye on the usage of anybody that you might be considering. See what they were used over the weekend. And if their team has an off day on Monday and they're going to rest their entire bullpen, obviously that gives them less opportunity or less chance of being used right away if everybody's rested. But in those perfect scenarios where the rest of the bullpen is taxed and maybe they weren't even used throughout the course of the weekend, these are guys that you can almost be guaranteed that they're going to come into the game on Monday or Tuesday and then keeps them fresh and open to maybe make at least two or three more appearances throughout the course of the week, racking up one, two, or three strikeouts each time. And then if they're able to put up that kind of volume, basically volume their way into starter streamer numbers, not hurting your ratios most of the time.
Yeah, I want to echo something, bring together what both of you said there with the Scott brought it up for daily leagues. Even with a maximum on relief appearances, I'm in a daily change league where the maximum relief appearances is 30. You're not going to get to 30. And I see these guys that don't do this, and I think it's because they're afraid. The site tells you how many starts you've had for the week and how many more starts you're projected to have for the week. So people can gauge what that is. It doesn't tell you how many relief appearances you've had on Fantrax. You have to know that yourself. And people, I think, are afraid they're going to approach this 30, which you're not. Most of these relievers are going to get 3 appearances in a week, maybe 4 in a really heavy week. So even if every pitcher in your lineup was a relief pitcher, you're not exceeding 30 relief appearances. So throw them out there every day, as many as you can, just echoing what both of you guys said there.
God, a real team can't get 30 relief appearances a week. Right. Not even the Rays get 30, right? And they start guys out in the fifth. That's a ton, right? So if it's like 30, like, that's not a max. That's just like they made up a number. There's no max. Right. There's no cap.
I got to put something. All right, just put 30. All right.
30 cool. Might as well be 1,000.
There you go. Yeah, in my Dynasty League, it started up in 2000. We ended up putting a max ad max per week just to avoid this like mega extra streaming that you guys are talking about. And that happened in like year 4. So that happened real, real early. We've been running with a 4 ad drop max. Ashes. Pretty much. All right, we'll move on. We'll look ahead. We're going to jump ahead a little bit on both the show notes here and in time. And you guys can look through. I made a list of starters, starting pitching, who are currently lined up to possibly make 2 starts the week of May 17th through the 24th. And the majority, almost all of these guys might be available in 15 teamers, definitely available in a good chunk of 12 teamers. Obviously, I kept the Blake Snells and stuff like that off this list because it doesn't matter if you're in a 2 teamer, those guys are going to be available or not going to be available. So I'm going to do the same way. Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Give me 2 guys on this list that interest you, and then give me 1 guy that you want to fade. And you can't pick Austin Gomber as your fade because he is lined up as well. That's too soon for our listeners.
I'm a Wade Miley fan, and I've been on him all through the offseason. And he was a guy, as we talked about all through the offseason, to be a 2-start streamer early in the season, draft him in the last round, going to save you fab money. It's like your first fab move, only we're drafting him in the last round. And he was one of my favorites for that type of scenario. He didn't have the 2-start week immediately, but he did in the second full week of the season, performed well. And now congratulations, Wade Miley with a no-hitter yesterday, which is upsetting to me, the kind of fallout from that. This is the 4th no-hitter of the season, and if Wade Miley can get a no-hitter, anybody can get a no-hitter. Wade Miley is a lot better pitcher than a lot of pitchers that have no-hitters. He's obviously one of my choices, especially getting Pittsburgh this week, and then San Francisco does hit lefties well. That's a little scary for that 2-start week, but he's been on my roster all season when I intended to drop him after the first full week of the season. And I'm going right with the next guy, Alex Wood. We talk about him almost every week. As long as he is healthy, he's a very good pitcher. The start at Great American Small Park, starting to warm up, and that's a couple of weeks away. That could be even worse. But at home versus Texas this week, and then at home versus the Dodgers, who haven't been hitting for 3 weeks now. Granted, this is 2 weeks away. It's the Dodgers, but they have a lot of injuries. We don't know how quickly they're going to turn that around. So I'm taking the first 2 guys on your list as the guys I like. The guys that scare me a little bit, that I'm fading. I don't like Chichi Gonzalez, I don't think, going to San Diego for one of his in his 2-start week. And as much as I'm trying to buy in to Alex Cobb, I'm just afraid a big blow up is coming. So those are probably the two that I'm staying away from.
Scott, I'll send it right back to you as well. Same question. Who do you like? Who don't you like on this list? And feel free to even double up on any of the guys that Kevin might have talked about as well.
Yeah, so you're giving me an open forum, so I'm picking the Tigers, right? Look, the only bigger Tarek Skubal fan than me is probably named Mrs. Skubal, right? I'm a huge fan. I love this stuff from the left side, but let's be real. The command has not been there. He's really struggled. He's either missing the zone or he's serving up meatballs, right? But he's going to get the Royals. He's get the Royals this coming week, and then he's got the Mariners and the Royals again. These are teams that even if he leaves some stuff in the heart of the plate, these are teams that might not punish him that hard for it, right? So I do think that's something you can look at. In a 10-team league, I probably wouldn't. There's just going to be better options, right? But in deeper leagues, I definitely think that's something worth looking at, especially if you're getting a little desperate. And then, of course, Spencer Turnbull. I don't think we've seen the best from him quite yet, but one thing we have seen is that he's not giving up the home run ball. And if he's not giving up the home run ball to the Yankees or the Red Sox, he's sure as heck not going to give it up to the Royals or the Mariners. I know the Royals have hit a bunch of them so far, but the first game is going to be at home this week. Next week, he'll get them in Kauffman, which is a big cavernous stadium. I really like what Spencer Turnbull can do there. Again, that's like probably more of a 12-team play. The guy I'm fading, because I'm making this all about the Tigers, because I can. You let me on the show, and that's just what I'm going to do. Matt Shoemaker just killed the Tigers again, right? And if you look at his game log, which is always something you want to do, he's got two really good starts. And guess what? They're against the Tigers. He's only been good against the Tigers. He has been bad everywhere else. Like, pretty specifically bad against everyone else. So I'm definitely fading him. I think the White Sox can beat him up. Even the Indians, who are coming off their second no-hit in 3 weeks, Jose Ramirez should be all they need to beat up on Matt Shoemaker, because he relies so much on that splitter, which is a really hit and miss pitch. And apparently it only works against the Tigers. I don't know. It's really weird. He's been good against them, not against anyone else. So I'm definitely fading Matt Shoemaker and Merrill Kelly, just in case you were thinking about that, at Dodgers, at Colorado. That's scary. Even this coming week, he's got Miami. So you might think, oh, that's a stream. Well, Merrill Kelly's not actually good. He's a fine Major League Baseball player. He deserves to be on a roster. He does not deserve to be on your fantasy roster at this time, because he doesn't strike out a lot of guys and he gives up a lot of home runs. Like, that's a really bad combo. You don't want guys doing one of those. You don't want a guy who isn't striking out batters or is giving up home runs. He does both. He doesn't strike guys out and he gives up home runs. So go ahead and pass. It's got a lot of Austin Gomber to it.
You know, Scott, the great thing about both of us being fans of American League Central teams that are not in Cleveland is we cannot bring up the fact that they were no-hit twice in 22 days enough.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but the Indians were actually no-hit twice in 22 days and 3 weeks. It was amazing. The podcast coming out Monday morning, you better believe I'm talking about it. It comes out. We've already recorded it. It's done. I mentioned
it. It might happen a third time by then.
Oh, yeah. It'll be dated by then, right? We're going to get no hit by the pitching machine here pretty soon.
All right. That's good. That's good stuff, guys. All right. As we talk about all the time, looking ahead can save you a good chunk of change in FAB, and that adds up throughout the course of the year. Let you have that hammer when that new shiny toy does come up and you want to make sure you grab them. As I pointed out in my Waiver Watcher article earlier this week, the examples from last week included Cole Irvin, Tyler Anderson, and Nick Pivetta all going for significantly less in the week prior. So in the main event, Cole Irvin was picked up in 16 leagues on the 25th. He's only available to be picked up in 9 leagues and went for about 3 times as much in FAB. And so all these guys are, again, if you have the ability to stash them, if you don't want them for that single matchup, great, put them on your bench, but also keep an eye on who they have that for that single matchup. And if you are able to rotate two of those pitcher spots on your roster, always having one guy that's going to start 2 weeks down the road while holding on to the guy who's starting 2 weeks this week that you got the week prior, again, that all adds up in your FAB bidding. So you want to keep an eye on those. Of course, these are always subject to change. There's always a risk. That's why they cost less in your FAB. Rosters can change, injuries can happen, and schedules can change with rainouts and what have you. So always tread cautiously in that realm as well. All right. And we typically, one of the last categories is everybody's favorite category. Of course, that is saves. Any save situations out there worth taking a look at? Rafael Dolis left the game in Toronto, or sorry, in Dunedin for the Blue Jays and is considered day-to-day at the moment. And we'll see if anything comes from that. Jordan Romano looks to have been held in most leagues, but I would assume if he happens to be available in your league, you'll see decent bids on him as well, especially with David Phelps on the IL for the Blue Jays as well. But the question I have for you guys is in Gabe Kapler has threatened to do Gabe Kapler type things in San Francisco and has said that Tyler Rogers might see some extra save opportunities for the Giants. Kevin, is Tyler Rogers, who is 46% rostered in TGFBI, so still widely available in 15 teamers, are you looking at Tyler Rogers as an option if you are desperate for saves?
He's one of the guys. I don't know that I'm in this position in several leagues, and I have guys in, you know, I have Hansel Robles rostered. I have guys like this on several teams, and I think he's in that same situation. I don't know that I go switching out, but if I need saves and I need somebody to fall into that opportunity at some point in the future and I have room, he's definitely a possibility. McGee got the save right after Kapler said that, though, right? So we don't know if he's saying that to give Rogers some confidence or why he's making those comments. But yes, he is someone that could fall into that opportunity at some point in the future, but I don't think I'm getting rid of another player that I have that's in the same situation to make the room.
Scott, have you seen any other bullpen situations worth speculating on this coming week?
Yeah, I think the one that I'm going to be speculating on very lightly is Colorado. Daniel Bard has really struggled. I know he did get a save on Wednesday, but it's not been good. I love Daniel Bard in terms of the story, but he's definitely on the hot seat right now. He struggled. Michael Givens is the guy that I would expect, maybe Robert Stevenson, one of those two. Givens, former closer in Baltimore, wasn't great at it, but he does have good stuff, and he's pitched a lot these last couple of seasons, a lot more than you'd probably think. He's out there, and he's pitched okay so far this season. Of course, Robert Stevenson is another guy who neither of these guys are like super flashy or like game-changing, but saves are saves, even for Colorado, right? They don't get a ton because they're not good. They could get save opportunities pretty darn soon here. So that's probably where I'm looking. And I'm very specifically not looking at Tampa. I know I talked about Pete Fairbanks because I'm interested in the quality of his innings, but it's ridiculous. I think they've got five co-closers right now, or four. I think it's four. Fairbanks, Kittredge, Springs, and Thompson, right? Like, just save yourself that, and maybe even Hunter Strickland, because why not? Why not? Who cares, right? So with that specific situation, I want to tell you, save yourself the sanity, save yourself the hassle, just let it go. Don't worry about it. Let that be someone else's problem. You don't need it. Now, if you pick someone up, do it because you just want the innings and the strikeouts. And if they get a save, it's like a bonus, right? It's, oh, hey, that was nice too, right? But don't be like trying to invest. Like, I'm not bidding hardly anything on any of those guys if they're available, because like I said, the Rays don't even know who's going to get the spot until like it's the eighth inning, right? And you got to set your lineup before the eighth inning, right? If they don't know, you can't know. So I would definitely urge you to skip that one and just look at something else, anything else.
I think just not looking at bullpen situations at all would be the preference for most people at this moment, but it's necessary.
It's evil. Definitely better for our mental health. That's for sure.
Michael Givens, you guys mentioned earlier, was a big pickup last week, getting picked up in 14 different TGFBI leagues, averaging $27 fab bids, the high of 104, and picked up in 32 of the 43 main event leagues as well, with a high of 121, averaging it out at 38. So a lot of speculation in Colorado. Obviously, never the pitching situation that you want to speculate on anything in Colorado. But when you're desperate, you do desperate things.
$104? Like dollars? All right. That's cool. I mean, that's bold. That's bold.
Bold. Yeah. And low is one, though. There's other teams got them for $1. So
Just trying to understand the range, the top and the bottom there. I'm not passing any judgment. I just want to know what that range was. Clarify the unit of measurement. When you said 104, it surprised me a little. So I just thought I'd clarify. Dollars. Okay, dollars. All right.
We're going to close out today on some prospect speculation. Speaking of speculation, a lot of big name prospects in the news, or at least in the tweets, if you will, expected to get the call very soon, if not by the end of the month, as Kevin, you mentioned with Kelenic in Seattle. I want to ask you guys about a hitter and a pitcher. There's a couple of guys I listed on here, but I want to focus on these two guys and whether or not you think they are worth stashing at the moment. Pick this out. Scott, I'm going to start with you with the hitter. Khalil Lee may get the call up to New York for the Mets. Of course, Lee was the involved in the trade with Kansas City Royals and Boston Red Sox, going to the Mets from Kansas City. Per the sources of Anthony DiComo, with Nimmo being injured, the Mets have instructed Khalil Lee to be ready, quote unquote. So is Khalil Lee somebody that can make a difference in New York for the Mets in that outfield? Is he worth the stash? And then in a league like NFBC, where you can't stash him unless you drafted him, is this somebody you think will be going for big money, like a Fabapalooza type of prospect?
No and no.
No.
He's at this stage, right? So very little power to speak of, even in double A. Right. So that's a little scary. You don't like to see guys who are slugging under 400 in double A. And he's not better than the guys they're using on the bench right now. I don't think he's any major improvement over the 27-year-old Jose Peraza. I don't think he's all that much better than Albert Armora. I just don't see, like, I hear them saying they want to get him ready and that's exciting because he's new, but like, they're probably better off with Pilar and Smith and Conforto in the outfield right now. Right. And they're better off using the two guys they already have on their bench. I just don't see, this doesn't help them much as a team, and it certainly wouldn't help you that much in fantasy because it's not like he's a rabbit. He did steal a whole bunch of bases in double A in 2019, stole 53 of them in 129 games. That's really cool, but like he's not super fast, and like stealing bases in the minors is just like par for the course. They're not quite, those pitchers are not really thinking about how to keep guys on. They're thinking about how to tweak their breaking ball and fix their command. So I'm just not that interested. I'm not sure if I'm adding him. I don't know what for, right? I don't know what he's going to give me, right? Other than like a new name, a new face. And when that's where you're at, you just got to let it go.
That's good. And then on the pitching side, Kevin, I want to get your take on Nate Pearson possibly joining the Blue Jays or rejoining the Blue Jays. As Dan Schulman mentioned in his tweet from ESPN, he's on his way to Houston per manager Charlie Montoyo, and he may start tomorrow, which would be Sunday, according to this tweet, depending on how things go. So is Pearson, do you expect Pearson to be a big bid this weekend based on this news?
Yeah, absolutely. If he starts tomorrow, right? Starting the season in the minors, I don't think in FBC leagues he'd be available yet unless he was drafted and dropped. So that start tomorrow is key. And then it depends on how he performs tomorrow. I would almost hope that it's a solo performance, keep the price down a little bit, because we had high expectations for him coming into last season and it didn't really quite pan out, but he's got all the potential in the world. He's one of the top pitching prospects in baseball for a reason. So I think the ideal situation is he starts tomorrow, is okay, not great, and keep that price down a little bit tomorrow evening.
Good notes there on that. A couple other guys just to keep an eye out. Joe Adell for the Angels, just with Albert Pujols being released, moving Jared Walsh to first base. John Jay is taken over in right field. One has to assume that Joe Adell would be an option to come up earlier than they might have expected earlier in the season. And then Mackenzie Gore got some praise from AAA manager Edwin Rodriguez of El Paso, saying that he is, quote, very close to being ready for the majors, according to a tweet from Dennis Lynn. And when he gets there, he expects the Padres to keep him there. So they want to be patient, but it sounds like he is a lot closer than some reports we might have heard over the course of the last couple of weeks.
I'm a big fan of Adell, but he keeps striking out in the minors still too, right? Two strikeouts in each of his first two games. There's a game going on right now. He's got another strikeout in that one. So as much as I want to be excited, they don't have to rush him up. Like, John Jay's not awful, right? Like, he's okay if you've only got one of them out there. It's not like the White Sox where they're running like Lurie Garcia and Adam Eaton at the same time. It's you just got the one of them. It's fine. But I don't think he's coming up until he's not striking out half the time.
Yeah, I think the assumption was that Brandon Marsh would get the call before him, but obviously he's still hurt, not even ready for the start of the minor league season himself. So the speculation has definitely arisen that Joe Adell might get a call earlier than expected. But I think you're right, Scott, that like the expectation was that Adell would spend extra time in the minors cutting down that strikeout rate. And if he didn't do it, maybe they get an extra year of control, because if they hold him down long enough into the season, they get that as well. So things to keep an eye out. I personally wouldn't be stashing Adell for that reason. Personally, if he does come up and he's not stashed, he'll still go for something like over triple digits in your leagues where he is available if he comes up at that time. So if you want to save money and you have the spot to stash him, this is the time to get him a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. On the plus side, they do have this track record of having these outfielders who struggle in their first time in the majors, send them down, then bringing them back up. They got this guy that I think plays center field now, Mike Trout, right? Like, had a trajectory like this, like almost exactly like this, except with fewer strikeouts and just poor hitting. But hey, it's worked for him once before. It went okay. Hopefully it does again, right?
If it happened once, it can happen hundreds of times. All right. Is there any other guy, any other player out there, Kevin, that you want to throw out as a wild card, as somebody just to keep an eye out, keep on your watch list, or throw out a speculative bid that might be able to help, whether it's a big name that we can talk about or just as a possible bench bat or pitcher?
I was looking at it. His next few matchups scare me and probably do most people. So if he's available, he's probably going to be very expensive if you got the room. Justin Dunn. I don't like his next few matchups. He does have one with Cleveland, but he's got to go at the Dodgers before that. Just a speculative pick for if you got a spot.
Yeah, I like Justin, that call of Dunn. He does have the Dodgers this week. I see that he might be starting against Detroit next
week.
That would
be so much better.
And then at San Diego, if they do away the six-man rotation and they find a way to get him two starts. So not likely, but... yeah, he either gets Detroit, and of course he's got the Dodgers this week as well. All right, Scott, any other name out there that we didn't talk about that is worth mentioning, or you feel like you said your piece?
Yeah, no, I think the 16,000 words I've said already is probably good. Yeah, I think I've gotten a few ideas out there. I snuck in an opinion or two, so I think I'll call it.
All right, appreciate it. That's good. Kevin, leave you with your parting words for our listeners. Any added advice you have for everybody going into the FAB period on the 9th of May?
Not really this week. We say it every week. It's probably your biggest piece of advice I hear you say the most often. Check who was dropped. Last week was a big weekend for injured catchers. I had to replace both of my catchers in 1-2 catcher league. Yadi's back this week. He's available in a lot of leagues. People don't hold their catchers. That's just an example. Check who was dropped. See if you can snag somebody on the cheap.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kyle Higashioka of the Yankees was dropped in a league in the main event the same weekend that everybody was picking up catchers.
He went for triple digits in a league and got dropped in another league. That's insane.
No, that's yeah. So the single league, granted, but... That just shows that anybody can be dropped at any time. Frankie Montas was dropped in a league in the main event. Evan Longoria was dropped in a TGFBI league. Jonathan India was dropped in a TGFBI league. So some interesting drops last week, as there always are, and you never know. So yes, watch your drops. Really good advice I always tell people too is when you're looking through your FAB wins and you see the drops, immediately add those players to your watch list. And like, you don't need to put a bid on them on Sunday night at 11 p.m. for the following week, but just put them on your watch list so you don't forget about them. So
100%.
Interesting there. All right. If there's any other players that you were thinking about bidding on or you want us to discuss them, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com or shoot us a DM on the Twitter at onthewirepod. You can also join PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of over 800 members, including all the incredibly smart staff that you are listening to right now. I'd like to once again thank Scott Chu for joining us for this episode. Scott, can you remind all of our listeners where they can listen to you or read your work and what you might have working on that they should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits. That's If The CHU Fits. You can find me, you know, today you can find me on this podcast. When you're listening, Monday mornings, I've got Hacks and Jacks that comes out, and that's like the spiritual successor to the former On The Barrel podcast. We focus almost entirely on hitting. We talk a little bit about pitching, but then I defer to all the smarter people than me at this site that, you know, focuses a lot on pitchers, and I don't, right? That's why I stand out. I'm not as good at it as everyone else. But we also, PL Shorts every Tuesday and Thursday comes out, where we cover a fantasy topic and then a little bit of DFS. We'll give you like a couple pitchers, a couple stacks to look out for. Fridays, I've got just a general fantasy podcast at Friends with Fantasy Benefits with my buddy Darius, who's from the UK. He's super smooth. So if you listen just to hear his very pleasant UK accent, I think it's probably worth it for you. I write the Batter's Box once a week. I think Adam does at least one. So that comes out on Monday mornings. And then also, it's winding down right now, but I do have my fantasy curling. It'd be weird for me to be on a podcast, not mention the curling, the fantasy curling. I don't have any going on right now, but get ready. Next year is a big year for fantasy curling, especially with the Olympics on the horizon. So that'll be out there. And if you go to my Twitter, I've got it pinned, the Wall Street Journal article that came out about fantasy curling and other fantasy sports, fantasy bird watching, fantasy Supreme Court. They're all out there, right? That's all kinds of fantasy sports, but I do enjoy the opportunity to come on here and talk about baseball, the one I'm much better at.
Yeah, I noticed there's obviously on the PL Discord, there's a whole lot of channels, and we did get a curling channel added somewhat recently, and I'm pretty sure that was your doing. So you could talk about curling there as well.
The famous inventor of fantasy curling, i.e. me, took me like 3 years to get that channel put on. Right? Getting in the Wall Street Journal was not enough. That was in 2019. That's when that came out. That was not enough for a channel. So eventually, I think actually someone else asked, and then we got a channel. Got some Canadians pipe up, and then they got a channel.
There you go. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week on The Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. And you can follow Kevin at HastingKevin, and keep an eye out for Kevin's weekly Fab preview article. It comes out every Sunday, as well as my Fab review article titled Waiver Watcher that comes out every week as well. Both can be found at pitcherlist.com and by following at pitcherlist on the Twitter. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are a proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network, along with 20 other incredible podcasts. Make sure to follow at Pitcher List Pods to get updates on every new episode that drops from each of them, and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Scott for joining us. And for Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.